audio show which entertains and educates the globe is a piece of cake. When you've got the Midweek Drive and Midweek Drive Morning Edition teams on the case for Siren 107.3 FM and sirenonline.co.uk.
Hurrah! That's what we say. Hurrah and triple hurrah. What's the weather like in Nashville, Cameron?
We had a storm go through last night, so it's taken a little bit of humidity out of the air, but we're about 92, 93 degrees today.
And coping with it, no doubt. That's the important thing.
Oh, yeah.
We love the precipitation levels that we actually get in Lincoln, don't we, Katie?
Oh, it's a bit damp.
Yeah, it is. But it's never damp when we have the unveiling of another little ident. And I'm sorry, Cameron, but this needs to come before your good self and the whole sequence, because it's 15 seconds carved out of the metaphorical granite of the wondrous world of the Midweek Drive team, just like this.
Bond. Christy Bond. Not so much a first-class honors English graduate as a force of writing nature and a passionate supporter of rights for mermaids.
Yeah, that's true. You see, Christy, we've had that for quite some time, but finally you have got your very own personalised jingle there, you know, personalised to you. From Villainous and the Midweek Drive. That's something to tweet about, isn't it?
Yeah. Oh, my God. That's amazing.
And we'll play it again later in the show. You can see the excitement this generation
has. There's a lot of pressure there to live up to that ID. Yeah. You know, I would say under-promise, over-deliver. It would be like Christy Bond, she's okay. And then when you're actually... You know, then when you're actually on the air, people are, you know, they're getting value for money. Mm-hmm. They think, wow, she's really good.
Yeah, but we know that, and we've been assessing the whole thing. That's why we've worked our way through that whole process until finally that's what's been manifest. Yeah. Oh, you're so Canadian sometimes, Cameron, honestly, you know.
No.
Even though you've got a green card.
See, it could be just as simple as Christy Bond. She doesn't suck. You know,
Well, you know, there you have it. You know, sometimes people go a bit of hyperbole. You know, some people take that hyperbole away. Let's move into the country with Mo Pitney. Yep. Over to you, Cameron.
This guy has kind of been slipping in under the radar on country radio here. I don't know if you hear the big storm that's always going on about bro country and kind of the pop country thing, and people are saying we want real country music. And I always kind of liken this situation to the early 80s coming out of the urban cowboy phase. And you got some great names that came out then. George Strait came out, Reba McEntire, and a guy named Randy Travis. And when Randy Travis hit the air, everybody was like, what is that? And he's become one of the top stars in country music in the 80s and 90s. And I think the situation is the same now. This guy is named Mo Pitney. He's kind of flown in under the radar with this song called Country. I got the chance to interview him during CMA Music Fest for Young Country TV. Nice guy, really cool guy. I hope you like this song because it's doing really well. This is Mo Pitney and Country on Siren 107.3 FM.
Guitar on your front porch in the morning as the sun was rising. Yeah, I love my country. Let me tell you about country.
Full of thoughtful comments and votes and such like stuff there. Votes, yes, those as well. If you were working that. Christy Bond, interesting line. You saw the image, you saw the video, you saw the folk there, and you said...
Well, it was actually Katie who noticed it first.
It's not his voice, they say.
Yeah.
It can't be his voice. He looks a lot... He looks as though he's barely out of school. Expected a much more mature sound.
Yeah, I think you're seeing a little bit of makeup going on there for the video.
I think there was a bit of nip and tuck perhaps going on there. I mean, he is indeed 68. Mo, it's okay.
Now, there's a picture of him and I together, and I think that's probably a much more accurate thing, and And I guess it maybe flatters him a little bit more because I look so old. And
now, Cameron, you're using the O word. We don't use that on this show. We simply become more experientially enhanced or chronologically gifted. It's very important.
You that's right. To these let's go with that.
Anyway, Katie, what did you make of Mo Pitney?
I really liked it. It had a really nice beat to it, a really nice little swing to it. Yeah.
By the way, you can actually physically move that microphone close to yourself. You don't have to lean over to the whole system as though you're backing singers for one of the Diana Ross numbers. It's okay. You can move it, move the microphone to you quite extensively. But, and Christy, marks out of 10 if we went that far?
Yeah, close to the 10. I think it's close perfect. I think it's perfect for country sound, definitely.
And Katie?
I'd go for 9.5.
9.5. Would the rats like it?
Oh, I'm sure they'd love it.
Very good. It's a genuine sort of comment, as you know, Cameron. You know, it's not a case of we're trying to be funny here about some sort of boomtown sort of people here. But, you know, Katie's musical rats are very vital to the whole sort of sequence of the whole thing. Well, there we have it. A thumbs up for Mo Pitney. As Emma, who normally actually has the casting vote in terms of saying, yeah, we must get this person on the show or not, is in Surrey. Hopefully this is the show. We need to ask you, Christy, in her stead. Should we actually ask Cameron if Mo would like to join us on the air in the near future?
I think that'd be fantastic.
There we are, Cameron.
All right, I'll see if I can.
Word has gone out.
Make that happen.
Katie Dawe, last two questions for Cameron Tilbury, please.
Cameron, have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us today?
I sure have. And you know, in the spirit of the station ID thing, I don't think I sucked.
No.
Yes. Which means we need to lead on to.
Will you be joining us again soon?
I'll be back next week.
Time now for a weather forecast, courtesy of Annie Lennox and Dave Stewart, also known as the Eurythmics. Fairly standard, fairly straightforward. Here comes the rain again.
On Siren 107.3 FM, a show that enhances, educates, and entertains.
Quite right, too. Or else, if we press this button here.
Annette Andre, ace actress and top correspondent, now live on the Midweek Drive.
Yes, absolutely. Well, live after fashion, because due to various other bits and pieces, we've pre-recorded this little package, so it's all working splendidly well. Just come out of Jersey, and now over to your good self, Annette, in the joys of California. And how are you?
I'm very well, thank you. I mean, this is the first time we've pre-recorded.
I know, it's outrageous. But we thought, well, because you've got a meeting to go to and we were squeezing in a range of other factors, including Combat Radio's very own Ethan Dettmeyer, Charlie Stockman, an ace comedian, and indeed Sheridan Moss, the digital marketing executive for the Happy Egg Company, we thought it's best to actually sort of go for a pre-record and look through that. Before we go into the topic of this month's wonderful audio letter, though, it's worth mentioning that we're very, very saddened by what Walt Palmer, father of two who practices in a small town in Minnesota, got up to recently. We know he's probably a wonderful dentist, he's probably a fantastic father, but please do not go and shoot wildlife. It's not good, it's not clever.
Well, do you know, I mean, funny you should say that, because just before you called, I was looking, I'd put stuff up on my Facebook about just about that and some petitions to sign, and I got a lot of comments from people who are horrified by the whole thing, and I'm going to add to the Facebook thing later today that anybody who can either start a petition or put things on Twitter, because I'm not good at Twitter, there should be something started to get people in the Minnesota area around near where he is to picket his practice.
Mm. I mean, I'm not sure whether
up there with signs and picket his practice, because He deserves it. He knew what he was doing.
I mean, certainly the point is, I mean, we hear that he's well known in big game hunting. He once told the New York Times that he could fire an arrow through a playing card at 100 yards and didn't carry a firearm as backup against his prey. The unfortunate thing about this whole incident is it just demonstrates quite manifestly, it doesn't matter whether it was a line that was well known or not, that actually it's intrinsically lot wrong to actually start going hunting our fellow citizens of the planet, shall we say.
Absolutely, and let it be injured for 2 days.
Yep, indeed.
Not
good.
It was just injured. He can't even shoot.
So how we actually move from that to hopefully a more uplifting note, I really don't know, but we will. But I just thought, obviously, given your interest and commitment, actually, quite rightly, to such things, it was worth at least sort of sharing our disapproval and extreme concern about that particular issue.
So, absolutely.
Shall motor on.
Yes, absolutely.
What would you like to share with us today?
Well, today I've got a fly on David Attenborough's shoulder.
Well, let's go for it then.
About 3 months ago, a pair of house finches began building a nest in a metal and glass light fixture that hangs on a wall outside the kitchen windows. The birds are small and slender, dull brown like a pair of World War II cotton stockings, the male distinguished by a red cap. It was clear from the start that this was a poor choice for a nest site. Time after time, the male and female flew into the small bottom opening of the fixture with strands of dried grass and shards of branches, only to have their efforts fall off the narrow ledge inside the light. I watched daily in apprehension and admiration as eventually, against all odds, a nest began to take shape. From the difficult nest site to the seemingly chaotic delivery schedule of the building materials, I came to believe that the finches were new at the parenting game. What drove them to refuse to pack it in and find some new real estate to make a secure home for their prospective family? Was it a rigid instinct that forbade them to make a new plan? Did the lack of prior experience in nest construction force them into hammering a square peg into a round hole? Was nature antagonistic to free will, denying the small creatures the flexibility to ad lib and experiment? You can tell from the number of questions I asked myself as the nest took one step forward and then a stumble put the construction back a day or two, that I had my doubts any chicks would result from the finches' Herculean efforts. I'd sweep up the debris that collected at the base of the fixture, and then in wonder, peer up into the opening in the bottom at the intricate weaving of the nest, done not with fingers or a loom, but just with a beak, and a very small one at that. This house finch watch wasn't the first time I had a front row seat to the extraordinary preparations necessary for us to see birds take wing and hear their songs. Over the garage door in our Hudson Valley house, a pair of Phoebes came back each spring for 7 years to build a nest under the eave of the roof. Like the Finch property, I thought the Phoebe site doomed to failure. For starters, it was just above the garage door, perched precariously, like the Finch nest, on a narrow ledge. Every time the automatic door opened to the loud groaning of gears and pulleys, I was certain that the fragile-looking nest would be crushed at best or knocked to the ground. But neither disaster happened. Instead, for 7 outings, the Phoebes successfully raised clutches of 4 to 6 chicks and allowed me to be a close-up witness to the complex partnership between the male and female that produced the next generation. Over several weeks of daily repair, the finches' activity came to a sudden halt. Inside the fixture, I could see the female sitting in the nest. Eggs had been laid. I must admit here, for someone who is adamantly opposed to transplanting human behavior onto an animal, I was shamelessly giving into a serious bout of grandmotherly pride. It was the Phoebe's long run of success under potentially dire conditions that gave me a complacency about the finches duplicating that success. Once the eggs hatched, like a fly on David Attenborough's shoulder, I kept up a running narrative to all who would listen about every detail of the care and feeding of the four peeping chicks who now crowded the small nest. I even placed the round basket padded with a towel directly under the light fixture to soften the fall should any of the chicks tumble out of the nest. Although it was difficult to see clearly through the panes of rippled glass, each day I saw the chicks' heads rising up higher and higher above the nest rim to feed, proof that they were healthy and growing. Graham Greene, writing about the uncertainty of life, said that one never knows when the blow will fall. One morning, I came into the kitchen to find all three of our cats huddled together at the sliding glass door, their attention riveted on the ground beneath the nest. Two of the chicks were lying there, having somehow missed falling into the basket. In death, they now looked so small and fragile that I wondered if I'd been mistaken about their health. Did the parents know tragedy had befallen their family? Would they sense that there now were less mouths to feed? Can birds count? I buried the chicks in a stand of morning glories and watched as the female and her mate took turns flying in and out of the nest on food runs, seemingly oblivious to their loss. The next morning, the cats again signaled that the grim reaper had paid a call to claim a third victim. If the finch parents were aware of this latest calamity, they didn't show it. Like the Berlin airlift, they kept up a steady schedule of feeding flights to the remaining chick. But it was all too evident that this baby wasn't well. Its frail body barely able to support its head above the edge of the nest to feed. Eventually, first the male, then the female, halted attempts to feed, clearly sensing their efforts were useless. Against all experience, I had counted my chicks before they hatched, or to be literal in this case, I attempted to overlay the Phoebe's success onto the finches as birds of a feather. I know why now I had made the mistake of endowing nature with the power to protect the finches in the name of procreation, all the while being aware that this mystical shield doesn't extend to human beings. I was looking once again, here in my new home in California, to connect with that other part of me that Wanda, my wonderful black bear companion, had made possible so many years ago. It wasn't realistic to think I could will that once-in-a-lifetime bond to happen again. But then, certain as I am that the finches will try again, knowing me, so will I. And that's it.
Makes perfect sense. I could see them tweeting away. It's like Twitter, but with real live birdies. Quite phenomenal.
That's right.
Great stuff. Well, I know Annette, Katie Dore, who, of course, will be listening aptly with this whole thing, would have heaps of questions to ask you. So probably would Christy Barnes. So would Emma Tinsley, of course. But time is sort of beating us at this particular stage. So much to pack into the show. So I'll just go straight into those last two questions. Have you had a reasonably interesting telephonic link with us on the programme today?
Yes, I have. Always do.
And I take it you'll be able to join us again in person and once again live in the very near future, which would probably be sometime in August.
That would be wonderful. I look forward to it.
Yay, Annette André. That's the first pre-recorder we've ever done for an Annette André audio missive. Normally they're completely live, but this time around she realised that actually in the spirit of the cosmos, we needed to actually provide a nice uplifting story for our Jersey correspondent who's feeling a little bit poorly, but hopefully, like the little fantastic individual she is, we say, Anna Lewis, welcome to the programme. How are you?
Not too well this week.
I
seem to have gone down with gastroenteritis, which is not a nice thing to have at all.
As long as you haven't been getting it from Jersey Wonders, which have been past their sell-by date, all's well with the world. That's important. Anyway, not to worry. We're sending you positive vibes across the base. I don't know if you caught any of the stories there, or whether it actually sort of carried with it too many tales of your own famous budgerigar who loved Glen Campbell and Wichita Lineman.
Well, it's strange, this, because a small bird actually flew into my bathroom last week. And it was a very small sparrow, but I don't know how it flew in, because the bathroom window is quite a small, rather angled sort of point of entry. Mm. And the only other thing I can think of is it flew in through the air vent, you know, those ventaxia things that spin round. Mm. But it was so tiny and so noisy, but I was able to pick it up and send it on its way, and it flew off quite happily.
Okay.
So
you see,
all's well that ends well.
Clearly it wanted to do a little bit of pre-promotion for Andre's audio missive from California. Christy, gastroenteritis, it's not good. Have you got any advice that you can possibly pass on to Anna from your life and times and so on and so forth? Or is it a case of, no, just learn to live with it, really?
Don't drink Lucozade. Drink water only, because Lucozade, people think it replaces the electrolytes and fluids.
It just rots your teeth.
But it doesn't. It rots your teeth and it can make you feel worse, and it can make it last longer, because I've had that happen to me.
Having said that, if you are a representative from that Smith Clark, so kind company, obviously, you know, there are other fizzy drinks available and such like, and, you know, it's just part and parcel of the course. But it is interesting how the psychological thing of that goes, because, you know, as a child, we were always sort of say, yeah, it's all good for you, it helps restore energy and so on, and now obviously it's not necessarily the case. Katie, thoughts from yourself?
Smashed mashed potatoes are your friends.
Smashed mashed potato.
Potatoes. Right.
But not together with Lucozade. Disaster. Lord. Not work at all from that sort of point of view.
Oh, dear.
You will get better, Anna, because you're needed to return next week. And the Jersey Escape Committee need you. That's the important line. And I think we did a round of applause for Anna for actually coming on air with gastroenteritis. I mean,
whoa.
As I say, it's that spirit that won us the Falklands War. Speaking of which, we're moving back to the 80s with a vengeance with our next co-presenter. That's Ethan Detmeyer, who's going to talk about combat radio and a whole heap of other things. His company's Arsenal Productions and Management, nothing to do with the football team, but he's worked with the Ultimate Workout, Five Rands, with Clay Guider, and he represents a number of key folk, one of whom actually was in this series. But meanwhile, who asks the last two questions? Oh, I think it's you, Christy.
Have you had a reasonably well-healthed telephonic link with us today?
Well-healthed, yeah. Anna.
You've improved my health immensely. Good. By cheering me up. Yeah. Thank you.
And are you going to be joining us again next week?
I'm sure I will, and I'll feel a lot better as well.
Yay,
thank you.
Exactly so. Helicopters arriving as we speak. Mike Post and the City of Prague Philharmonic Orchestra and their interpretation, of course, of the A-Team original 1980 series, which I'm currently working my way through. It's through to season 4 now, just the start of that. Only 5 seasons to go. It's a kind of guilty pleasure, it has to be said. Dirk Benedict, Faceman, of course, Templeton Peck, together with Dwight Schultz as Howling Mad Murdoch, and, of course, B.A. Baracus, played by Mr. T., BA standing for Bad Attitude, as I'm sure you knew, Katie.
I didn't.
Yeah, right, there we are. And, of course, Hannibal Smith, who was the erstwhile leader of the group of ace combatants who kind of were imprisoned incorrectly after the Vietnam War in 1972, or indeed during the Vietnam War. They promptly escaped and made their home in the Los Angeles underground, where, if you can find them, you could hire the A-Team. But that was supposed to lead into Ethan Detmeyer, and we haven't connected with Ethan for any... He's just... The phone's there, the voicemail's there. Shall we endeavour to actually leave a message on his voicemail? And at least that way we've made that connection, and, you know, hopefully things would work out on that basis. I mean, you know, that's all we can really do. Failing that, we still actually have the joys of Charlie Stockman, who's coming along with us. Or maybe Ethan might actually pick up an answer. We don't know. It's just very confusing. We might get the message there. He might be sort of otherwise engaged. Previous links with Ethan, we've sort of found that he's had flooded households. He's had all sorts of challenges there. It's still ringing, still ringing. And of course, as Phil Dearness would actually say, if you get through to Ethan, if you can find him, a bit like the A-Team itself, really. Clearly, we need to have somebody who's dressed as a bad Chinese person somewhere in the heart of downtown Los Angeles call Mr. Lee, who could point us in his general direction. This isn't sounding good. It doesn't sound as though we're getting an answer phone. No.
Perhaps he's on a mission.
At the tone, please record your message. When you've finished recording, you may hang up or press 1 for more options.
Why would we want more options?
To send a fax, press 4 now. Leave a callback number, press 5.
Suddenly, you just think it's too much information. Oh, there's the beep. Well, this is the second time we've attempted to reach you, Ethan. And obviously, just like the A-team, we're going to have a Dirk Benedict connection there. We have not been able to find you. You have not been able to help us. That means that Christy Bond... Saddened, aren't you, Christy?
Yeah, I'm sad.
Katie Dorr, equally saddened.
Very saddened.
All set to actually... The number was actually there. There's, you know, the dialogue of discussion that we actually had there made public in terms of that, you know. I wished him a happy birthday back in the day. Everything else sort of agreed. Everything else was sorted. And you'd think he would have answered the phone. But his answer phone has. Ethan, take care of yourself. We'll speak soon, I'm sure. Meanwhile, we'll say fare thee well to Ethan Detmeyer for the moment. And clearly the Phil Dearness question will have to remain unanswered, which is why isn't he getting in touch with the whole thing? Maybe it's because he's just not. Anyway, still to come, all being well, Charles Armstrong. And maybe Charles Stockman as well. Charlie Stockman. Together, charlescomedy.net are the team that are actually there. We've played a little excerpt, of course, from the Charles scenario earlier, just for the benefit of Christy. And I think it's fair to say, Christy, you found it quite amusing about jaguars and such like.
Yeah, I did. I had makeup running down my face because I was laughing so hard.
It is very, very, very amusing in every sense of the word. And in fact, we've actually got a little snippet which takes us into the world of broadcasting, from the wonderful world of radio across the globe, after a fashion, a spoof radio station this, as the time hits 22 minutes to 6 o'clock. This is taken from, of course, charlescomedy.net. Their unique take on what happens with respect to DJs when they have one particular brand of music, and maybe the suits, for tis that term that we tend to use in radio land to refer to people who tend to run various things, they might have different ideas.
AC/DC with You Shook Me All Night Long, revving up another 50 minutes of non-stop rock.
We're going to take a quick break, but keep that dial tuned right here to the station that always gives you more rock, less talk, 106.9 The Bone. Well, 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 TJ the DJ comes back to The Bone. What's it been, 8 years?
10.
Just looking to boost your classic rock street cred?
Actually, I'm starting a new job here.
What? They're not bringing you back as a DJ, are they?
No, I'm the new station manager. Here. Suits upstairs want you to read these.
Cross-promotional spots for a monster truck rally to be read during non-stop rock blocks? No thanks, TJ. Never again.
Don't be a fool, Z.
All right, boneheads. You're back with the Z, man. And coming up, we've got a classic track from Aerosmith, followed by a Tuesday twofer from the Doobie Brothers, on the station that always gives you more rock, less talk. 106.9, The Bone.
Look, Z-Man, I know you're not happy about what happened back then.
Oh, you mean the 9 a.m. compromise? Completely forgotten about it.
But I had no choice. Those traffic updates gave us critical mainstream support.
And those ad spots gave us an important corporate ally.
You know how powerful Empire Carpets is.
And all we had to give up was 1 hour of non-stop rock.
We never could have held on to that power rush hour. People just weren't ready for that much rock with so little talk. The 9 a.m. compromise allowed us to bring back Get the Lead Out Fridays.
Another incremental step forward.
That's how change happens, Z. In 96, the ratio of rock to talk was 3-1. Today, it's 5-1. And yes, someday, God willing, it will be infinity. But we can't change the system overnight. And by compromising, we survived.
Oh, sure, we survived. But what about all the loyal boneheads? They believed us when we said we'd rock them nonstop from the daily grind at 9 till drive time at 5. What about them?
I made the right call.
No, you made a promise! 10 years ago in this studio, you made a promise! More rock, less talk! But since then, talk is all I've heard from you.
You know, Z, I had hoped that we could put the past behind us.
Talk, talk, talk. What's this?
Memo regarding potential transition of 106.9 The Bone to a new programming format. You coward, they're bluffing. What are they gonna flip us to? With Hot 91 and Live 105, the dance vertical saturated at, what, adult contempt? Hip-hop?
Talk.
What?
Talk radio. Keep reading.
If 106.9 The Bone continues its defiant insistence on playing an immoderate amount of rock relative to talk, the station's owners will be left with little choice but to eliminate all rock programming, thereby converting 106.9 The Bone to an entirely talk format. All right, boneheads. You're back with the Z-Man, and Two for Tuesday continues with back-to-back blocks of Leonard Skinner and Journey on the station that always gives you more rock, less talk.
That's why I'm here, Z. It's a last attempt at finding common ground. You know, 10 years ago, TJ and the Z-Man on 106.9 The Bone had a dream of a world with so much rock and so little talk that simply by turning on the radio, a man was guaranteed to be hit with a blistering guitar solo or a thinly veiled metaphor about the female anatomy. Well, I got news for you, Z. We're never going to see that dream become a reality. But if we grow up and do the smart thing, maybe our children will. Train's leaving, Z-Man.
It's got a kind of piquant humour, the sort of humour which would probably actually see somebody go off to the Edinburgh Festival and produce Moby Dick in space. The fact of the matter is, neither Charles Armstrong nor indeed Charlie Stockman have actually answered the phone as yet. Well, you know, what can we say? We did say, actually, originally we were going to come to them at 5 to 6 UK time, and it's a way before that, really, but not too far away. I thought they might have actually been here to have actually accessed the details. Clearly not. And Ethan Dettmeyer, well, lost in the rains of distant Los Angeles. Emma Tinsley is lost somewhere in London. Do you get those feelings? You have one of those days, Katie, and you think,
it's definitely one of
those. Where's it? I mean, it's enough to make you actually look back over, you know, some past sort of communications degree programs and try and find out a module which you're fairly convinced has never actually existed in your particular degree program, but you know, somebody's actually asked for it. Maybe not, you know, it's just a thought there. Listen, Christy, it's time to talk about mermaids and how successful was last week and the official mermaid launch, the online launching of the whole thing, where you were dealing with Canadian booksellers as if they were in the same room even though they were hours behind.
Well, last week I had an appearance on a book blog, so I was off doing a...
You were missed.
Oh, thank you. It's called a blog takeover, and that's where I, as the author, get to go and take over administrative roles on blog pages and pimp my books and ideas and find out what people are looking to see and read and what they're thinking about and just kind of... tell them about what's going on with the book and everything.
Did you feel that you'd improved yourself as a human being at the end of the blog takeover setup?
Yes, definitely.
That's the important thing. How can people find out about the mermaid epic that you actually produced?
They can find out about book one, which is being released soon, on Facebook via searching the Tidal Kiss Trilogy, which is the name of the entire trilogy. Book one is called The Kiss That Killed Me, and you can find out information about that on the Tidal Kiss Trilogy page.
Oh, well, and I'm sure, Katie, you'll be doing that forthwith, if not sooner.
I will indeed.
And a special name check, because you've been blogging about the show as well. Any little people you'd like to mention? Any little people? Sorry, Christy. It's just, you know, it's any leprechauns or elves that are actually out there.
Well, I would like to do a special shout out to my editor, who's been absolutely fantastic with me this last week. And I'd also like to thank my amazing online street team, the Tidal Telltales, who have been pimping and advertising me all week as well. So thank you to everyone who's been involved.
And they should certainly increase your percentage now, just because you've actually had that connection from that point of view onwards. Right, Harry Chapin. Have we heard of Harry Chapin? No. Well, we're in for another treat then, basically. Harry Chapin, probably the chap who actually set the scene for what became Live Aid and a whole heap of other things. Sadly, passed away in the 80s, but left us with a whole heap of wonderful story narratives and so on. And I know Phil is keen to sort of follow through on the David Cassidy line. Well, we might feature a David Cassidy track later, but this is Harry Chapin, Story of a Life, on Siren 107.3 FM.
I can see myself, it's golden sunrise. Young boy, open up your eyes. It's supposed to be your day. Now off you go, horizon bound, and you won't stop until you've found your own kind of way.